The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter number 74, text number 25 to 30, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on January 4th, 2008, in Melbourne, Australia.
But then, next stage, that is called Majjhamadhikari. In Majjhamadhikari devotee, he is very, or she, is very much eager to associate with devotees. He sees the different distinctions. He sees there's the Supreme Lord, there are the Lord's devotees, there are the innocent people that can be preached to and made into devotees, and there are also the flat, out-and-out Shishupals. You just want to avoid them. He sees those distinctions. And he's very, very eager to serve the Vaishnavas. He loves to be with devotees. He loves to serve the devotees. In this way, he's very, very much appreciating Vaishnava Sangha. So this person, he is very subtly situated in Krishna consciousness. He is called Majjhamadhikari. But then out of all the devotees, there are some devotees, they are called Uttamadhikari. And they are completely absorbed 24 hours a day in how to save all the fallen conditioned souls on this planet. They are completely absorbed in the mood of Sankirtan, always thinking how to save the suffering souls, that all the devotees in the movement can become happy. They're always thinking of the welfare of others. They're not thinking of their own welfare. They're always thinking of the welfare of others. These are called Uttamadhikari. So, we have to know how to associate with the different adhikaris. If there is Uttamadhikari, we should offer all respect and service to Uttamadhikari. We should be very, very eager for the association of such Uttamadhikari, and very, very much desiring to hear from, inquire from, and learn the science of bhakti from Uttamadhikari devotee. And Madhamadhikari, we make very good, nice friendship, you see. We have nice, loving friendship with the Majjhamadhikari. And to those who are Kanishta, then we're very kind to them. We want to encourage them. Yes, it's so nice you're coming to the temple. Here, have some prasadam. Here's the garland, prasadam garland for you. In this way, we want to do everything we can to get them feeling, well, these devotees are really nice. I just came for the darshan, but wow, these people are really wonderful. Maybe I should go hear one of the classes, you see. In this way, if we give mercy to the Kanishta Adhikaris, be very, very kind to them, you see. Anyone who walks in the door of the temple, even if they just come totally Kanishta mentality, they're a very, very rare person, you see. They're not an ordinary person, anyone who walks into this temple. So we should do everything we can to encourage those people, to be very kind to them. So they're actually amazed. I've never met a person who was so merciful, who was so kind, who was so friendly. I think I'll go to their classes. There's something special about these people at this temple. You see. So in this way, we should be very kind to the Kanishtas, and then they will gradually, by associating with the Majjhamadhikari and the Uttamadhikari, they will come up. So in this way, we have to understand there's different types of devotees, and we have to associate with them in the proper way. And by this proper etiquette towards the Vaishnavas of different categories, we will advance very, very nicely in Krishna consciousness, and everyone else will also advance very nice. The idea is that we are in this together. Of course, each one of us has our own spiritual progress. But we want not only to think of our own progress, we want to think of the progress of every member, you see. We want to go in such a way that every single member of our society is moving forward, and that society will gradually engulf the whole planet, that all living entities will move forward in Krishna consciousness. This Krishna consciousness is a very powerful thing. I have one godbrother, his name is Varkadish Das. When he got initiated, he was a little boy, very little boy, maybe 5, 6 years old. So he had, Prabhupada had very special affection for him. This was his probably his youngest initiated disciple. So Prabhupada used to have a nickname for him. He called him Mr. DDD, Dorkadish Das, Mr. DDD, he called him. So Prabhupada was very merciful to Mr. DDD. So anyway, one time, Dorkadish Das, Mr. DDD, he fed some ducks, Pashadam, in the park in Dallas. And he wrote Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, I fed the ducks some Pashadam. And Prabhupada said that those ducks will become human beings in the next life, you see. So there is great potency in this Krishna consciousness movement, even the ducks, you see. Devotee is thinking how to benefit the ducks also. He's even thinking how to benefit the ant, how to benefit the tree. He wants that all living entities shall become liberated from the cycle of birth and death. Wherever he goes, he's always thinking of the welfare of everyone. Actually, this is Prabhupada's definition, given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, of what it means to be Krishna conscious. Now, what is the name of our movement? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We're supposed to be Krishna conscious, right? So here is how Prabhupada has defined someone who's Krishna conscious in his Bhagavatam purport. He says, a Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver all of suffering humanity back to home, back to Godhead. That's what it means to be Krishna conscious. So we can look at our own heart, our own mind. We're thinking, well, what time is prasadam? When do I take rest? When can I get this? When can I get that? We're always thinking about ourselves. That means we're not really Krishna conscious in the true sense of the term, in the highest sense of the term. To really be Krishna conscious means to always be totally in the sankirtan mood of how can I live my life in such a way to have the maximum impact for the deliverance of all living entities throughout the entire material world, back to home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada says the Krishna conscious being is always in that mood. And he further explains that even if he is not successful in delivering everyone back to home, back to Godhead, his perfection is guaranteed. And anyone who follows him, they will also achieve perfection. So you really can't lose. The more you think about how I can live my life in such a way that every single living entity on this planet can be benefited with Krishna consciousness. In other words, we have to stop being so selfish. We have to become selfless. We have to think, how can I live in such a way to maximize the impact I can have for the spreading of this movement, you see? How can I adjust my activities, my thoughts, my speech in such a way that I can have the most impact for the deliverance of all living beings? That's what it means to be Krishna conscious. So, what Prabhupada is really saying, he wants us all to become uttama adhikaris, you see? Because that's the mood of an uttamadhikari. He's completely, totally absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness. That's his whole life at every minute. Everything is for spreading the movement all over the world. So, we have to keep advancing ourselves in Krishna consciousness. If I'm Kanishta, I should become Majjam. If I'm Majjam, I have to think, how can I become Uttama? Because Prabhupada wants us all to come to the perfectional state. And there's some perks available as well. It's not just, you know, there's great advantage because Krishna says, ye yata mang prapadyante tang stataiva bhujamyaham. Inasmuch as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So, the more you surrender to being completely sold out sankirtan devotee, dedicated to delivering all conditioned souls, the more you will have realization, the more you will feel genuine compassion, the more you will taste the bliss, the more you become fearless, the more your life will become a thrill at every minute. So there's a lot of perks for taking up this mood of pushing the movement forward. And just instead of just thinking about our own deliverance. There are two types of devotees. There's Bhajananandi, who's just thinking about his own deliverance. And there's Goshti Anandi who's thinking about delivering the world. We are meant in this movement to be Goshti Anandi, living our life in such a way that all living entities can become delivered. So, another benefit is it's very difficult to conquer over material desires. But if one becomes addicted to the desire to preach and spread Krishna consciousness, the nectar, the taste of preaching is so sweet that the material desires just fall by the wayside. It's higher taste. So therefore, if we can take advantage of this wonderful mercy of Lord Chaitanya and become a part of this, truly embrace this mood of pushing forward this movement, from whatever our position is, grihastha, sannyasi, vanaprastha, brahmachari, whether I'm living in the mandir, I'm living at home, wherever I may be, whatever my occupation may be, I may be a student, I may be a housewife, I may be an engineer, I may be a doctor, lawyer, prime minister, whatever I may be. If I take this mood, that live my life in such a way that this movement can go forward, that is the easiest way to be Krishna conscious. If you think about, if you live your life so that every, in such a way that every living entity on this planet can become Krishna conscious, your Krishna consciousness is automatically included. But if you just think of your own Krishna consciousness and to hell with everybody else, it's very difficult to be Krishna conscious. So there's a great benefit to being in this mood of pushing toward the movement, because your Krishna consciousness is automatically included. It becomes 1,000 times easier to be Krishna conscious when you take up this mood of preaching. So Prabhupada really, really emphasized this again and again and again and again. Preach to the world. He said, deliver your countrymen. They are dying. He so much emphasized this preaching spirit. This is the one thing that he attributes to his Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. From his father, he learned how to be a pure devotee. He said his father, Gaur Mahandev, was a pure devotee. He was totally absorbed in puja, 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 puja. He did the work. He had a shop, a cloth shop, but actually his real business was puja, not the cloth shop. He was always doing puja. Every minute, spare minute, he was doing puja. But the preaching mood, pushing forward Krishna consciousness, that was the one thing that Srila Prabhupada imbibed from his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So we don't want to miss that most essential ingredient to be in that mood of preaching, pushing forward Krishna consciousness. Because that's when you really can get the higher taste and easily conquer over the material desires. Because there's no taste like the taste of preaching. There's no taste so wonderful, so sublime, so intoxicating as pushing forward this movement. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
You have questions?
Yes, Srila Prabhupada has explained that in Indian railways they had one poster. The poster was, it is the duty of every employee of Indian railways to see that the train, the wheel of the train is moving forward. The train is moving forward down the track, is rolling forward down the track. Every single employee has that responsibility. So, of course, there is one employee. He is sitting in the engine car of the train and he's pulling the throttle so that the steam engine will, you know, start moving the train forward. There's one employee who does that. But there's another employee, he sits in one office and he has to sign one paper to authorize that train to roll down the track. So in this way, Prabhupada explains that every single member of ISKCON, whatever their service may be, they should do their service in such a way that the movement will go forward very nicely. If I'm a pujari, I should think, let me decorate these deities with so much love, with so much devotion, that anybody who comes in here will see this is God. And they'll want to surrender just by coming and seeing how beautiful the deities are. You see? Or if someone is cooking prasadam, they should put so much bhakti into that prasadam that anyone who tastes it will want to surrender to Krishna immediately. You see? If someone is giving a lecture, whatever you're doing, if you're cleaning, you know, just cleaning the temple, whatever you're doing, if you're going to a job to earn some money, we should think, let me make some money that I can give to the temple directly to help this movement go forward, you see. Everybody can be a part, and everyone must be a part in their service of pushing for this movement. Does that answer your question? Okay. You had a question. Prabhupada one time, there was some disciples with Prabhupada. And my godbrother Prajumna was there, and there was another devotee. And Prajumna, he seated himself a little bit closer to Prabhupada than to the other devotee, his godbrother. And Prabhupada chastised Prajumna for sitting closer to the spiritual master than the other godbrother. He said, he is your dada, he is your older brother, you should not sit closer than him. So that is one etiquette. If someone was initiated before me, then I should always see that this is my dada, and they say in Bengali, my big brother. That is all. That etiquette is always there. Just like the other day, Jai Pataka Maharaj, before he left, he asked me to please bless him. And I said, Maharaj, how can I bless you? You are my dada. You are my big brother. You see, he joined ISKCON before I did. But then he said, no, Vaishnava can bless. So then then I went ahead, and since he insisted that I bless him, then I did. But my mood was actually, you know, the younger takes the blessing from the older. Only when he specifically ordered me that I should, then I did, you see. So there's always that etiquette of offering respect to the senior. Those who were initiated. Of course, what do you do if somebody was initiated before, but they left the movement for many years? And somebody who has been loyal all these years and never left, and that gives them some seniority also. Those who never deviated. Sometimes, you know, someone joined earlier, but they, for many years, they weren't practicing. So that changes the situation. Any other, does that answer your question? Yes. How will you convince them? You have to, one way is you have to increase your own shakti by becoming more immersed in the holy name yourself. Because nama ruchi is a contagious disease. If you're still battling it out with the anartas in your own heart, and your taste is not very strong, then you have less potency to inspire them than you would if you were advanced more in the chanting. So one thing you can do is try to increase your own taste, so that just by your association, they will naturally become inclined to chant Hare Krishna. That's one thing you can do. The other thing is just fill them up with prasadam, with so much prasadam, that by the power of the prasadam, they'll start chanting, you see. Actually, it reminds me of the Chaitanya Leela. When Lord Chaitanya appeared, there was Muslims and Hindus in Mayapur. But it was the lunar eclipse. The lunar eclipse is considered inauspicious. So everyone was chanting the holy names to counteract the Hindus were all chanting the holy names to counteract the inauspicious influence of the eclipse. But the Muslims were making fun of them. Oh, those Hindus, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. They were laughing and making fun, mockingly chanting Hare Krishna. So somehow or other, induced them to say the names of God. And by that, they become purified. So So they are not chanting at all, huh? Nothing. You can trick them. You can say, why do you not want to chant Hare Krishna? You can get them to say, well, the reason I don't want to chant Hare Krishna is that you just got them to chant. You can try tricking them into saying it. You just have to keep trying and trying and trying. You have to be more determined that they're going to chant than they are determined they're not going to chant. And because your determination is spiritual and theirs is material, and sooner or later you'll win out. Yes. You can trick them to say Hare Krishna. Get them to say it, to vibrate it on their lips, and that will purify them also. You say, well, why you won't say Hare Krishna? He says, well, the reason I won't say Hare Krishna, you can trick them also sometimes. They don't realize what you're doing. The main thing is you have to be very, very determined to give them Krishna consciousness. More determined, you have to make your determination more powerful than theirs. Just like two men arm wrestling, you know. Who's going to win? Who's going to push the other man's arm down? You have to become powerful preacher, that your determination will overpower their determination. In the long run, that's what you have to do. If you have an ongoing relationship with them, you have to never give up. That I'm going to make them Krishna conscious. You have to be very determined, and sooner or later, if you keep your determination very strong and you're always trying to cultivate and deepen your own taste, I guarantee you, you'll win them over eventually. Next question. Yeah. The thing is, in preaching, there's always a risk. If we're so afraid of some little, that they may make some little offense, then how can we preach? Yeah, you may have to let it. I wouldn't ask them every day. So you don't want to cause them to make some blasphemy. But you know, every now and then, you have to use your discretion. If you see you're just wasting your energy, it's better to preach to someone else. The whole world is out there. Why not find someone who will chant and teach them how to chant? If we think I can only preach to certain people, then we don't have a very broad vision. Lord Chaitanya told us to preach to everyone. We think we can only preach to our friends and family members. Then you have to realize that actually everyone is your family member, because we're all the children of Krishna. These are all your brothers and sisters, all living entities. Yeah, if they're just stubbornly saying no, just to keep having them say, yes, I will do, and have them not keep their word, that's also not good. Stubborn? Questions more? Well, to neglect someone, or to mistakenly worship someone who is not worshipable, would not be as bad. Of course, the bad thing is to be offensive towards a devotee. That's offensive. That's the hati mata offense. If you're offensive towards a Vaishnava, that is the worst offense. If you accidentally give honor and respect to someone who's not worthy of worship, that's not so bad. But if it is at the expense of someone who should be worshipped, then it's not good. Actually, for preaching work, we can give all worship and honor, even to materialists, for preaching work. This is the method of Prabhadananda Sarasvati, a great father of Lord Chaitanya. He said you should approach the man, just a materialistic man. You approach him, you bow down at his feet, and you flatter him 100 times. My dear sir, you are so learned, you are so intelligent, you're so well dressed, so impeccably dressed. You have a wonderful car, you have a wonderful family, you have a wonderful reputation here in Melbourne. I've seen your picture in the newspaper. You're very highly esteemed gentleman here in the community. You must have a wonderful family member, you must have very great ancestors who didn't come here as convicts. And in this way, you glorify 100 times. And he says, all right, what do you want? He says, I want you to forget everything you ever learned and simply take Bhagavad Gita as it is. So actually, to honor and worship a materialistic person for the sake of preaching, that is a very good technique, a very good tactic. There's nothing wrong. But it's not that you neglect, you give all honor and respect to someone and neglect a Vaishnava who should be honored. That's the point. To honor and respect anyone, we respect even a little ant. You know the story of Murghari the hunter? You know that Murghari? How he respected the ant? You know that story? No? Yeah, there was one hunter, his name was Murghari. And he had been trained by his father. He didn't know anything. He just grew up in the forest with his father. His father taught him how to hunt the animals. That was their livelihood. The father taught him, you kill the animal halfway. So he's writhing in pain. And you watch him die slowly. And you take pleasure from doing this. That's how he was trained by his father. A horrible thing, to torture the animals. So Narada Muni came through the forest one day. And he saw this bizarre practice of killing an animal halfway and watching him flee. So he told the hunter, he said, what are you doing? You should kill them immediately, kill them full immediately. Don't torture them like that. So then the hunter surrendered, okay. And then Narada Muni said, but actually, you should stop hunting completely. He said, break your bow. Give up this hunting. And Murghari said, well, how can I break my bow? This is my livelihood. How will I eat if I stop killing the animals? He said, you don't worry. You and your wife, you go to this place, you get one cottage, you worship the Tulsi tree, and I will make sure that you have sufficient eatables. So he surrendered to his Guru Maharaj, Narada Muni, and he went there. And all throughout the whole vicinity, everyone heard, oh, that hunter, he has become Vaishnava. He's worshipping the Tulsi. So everyone would come for darshan, and they would bring in rice, fruits, dal, vegetables. They had a huge quantity. They had so much bhoga, they had to start a food for life program. So Narada Muni, then, he travels, you know. He goes to the, he doesn't have to fly on Qantas, you know, he's able to just go through space. And he likes to travel with company. He has his side, in Texas they call him sidekick. I don't know what you call him in Australia, but his buddy, you know, companion. He is traveling with his sidekick, that Parvat Muni. So Parvat Muni and Narada Muni, they're flying through space. And Narada Muni says, I think I would like to see my disciple Murghari, how he is doing now. That he's given up hunting and he is just worshipping Tulsi. So they came, and of course when you see your spiritual master, immediately you offer dandavat. Whatever you're doing, you offer dandavat. You see, that is the duty. As soon as you see Guru Maharaj, you're flat on the ground, that's it. But he hesitated. Instead of following a normal etiquette of going flat on the ground, as soon as he sees Guru Maharaj, he's going like this, and they look, oh, he's brushing the ants away, you see. He was so concerned, oh, there's some little ants here. If I do my dandavat immediately, I will crush this poor little ant. So he was very, very carefully, very respectfully and gently moving the ants out of the way, so then he can offer his dandavats, you see. So this is the mood of a devotee. Even the ant, he wants the ant should be properly honored and respected. So actually for a devotee who sees the super soul in the presence of every single jiva soul, he sees within every jiva there is Paramatma. So actually the devotee worships every living being because the Lord is residing in the heart of every living being. So to worship anyone, to respect anyone, that is never an offense. But to neglect the Vaishnavas being honored, that is evil. So any other question? Yes. Yes. If the big sannyasis fell down and broke the principles and went away, then what hope is there for me? Well, you just have to be more Krishna conscious than they were. That's all I can say. Simply having sannyas dress doesn't mean that you're an advanced devotee. You can't become Krishna conscious just by putting on a saffron robe and holding a danda. It's an internal purification of the heart. If you want to be solid in Krishna consciousness, then you have to cultivate As the Bhagavatam explains, ahaita ki apratiyata yayatma supersedati. You have to see that you're doing your service free of any motive. You're not doing it for name and fame, for profit, for distinction. You're doing it completely for the purpose of pleasing Krishna and no other reason. And you're doing it 24 hours a day, unbroken, uninterrupted. If you become very solid and you're in that mood of unmotivated, uninterrupted bhakti, you will survive in this movement. I've been around for 36 years, now going on 37. I've seen them come and go. It's like a bus station. I've seen devotees come and go, and they became big sannyasi, big GBC, big guru. You know, there's nobody immune from fall down. Doesn't matter what your position is, what your title is. Nobody is immune by dint of title and position from falling down. There's only one thing that protects you from falling down, that is cultivating pure devotional service. Therefore, I am emphasizing in my preaching pure devotional service. That every devotee should be cultivating pure devotional service. In North America, they have a gathering called the Festival of Inspiration every year. And they have seminars. So I contacted the seminar leaders because there was some bad fall downs that happened around that time in North America. And I realized that, you know, we really need to emphasize pure devotional service, prevent these kind of nasty fall downs from happening. So I approached the leaders and I said, I would like to give a seminar on pure devotional service. And they said, no. They said, I'm known for being the internet guru, you know, who's engineering all these innovative ways to use the internet for preaching. They said, you can do one on internet, but we don't want one on pure devotional service. And I was going, what kind of nonsense is this? You know, we're into the high-tech thing, but we're not into the basic thing. This isn't right. So I said, I'll make a deal with you. I will do internet if you let me do pure devotional service. And he said, all right. And when I gave the two seminars, guess which one was more popular with the devotees? Pure devotional service. Why did we join ISKCON? To learn how to surf the internet? No. Anybody can teach, any dummy can teach, any teenager can teach you how to surf the internet, how to do things on the internet. But there's one thing that we have here you can't get anywhere else in the three worlds, and that is pure bhakti, you see. So actually, some of the devotees were so inspired, they were actually in tears to hear this seminar. So I told them. And they said, all right, you're on for next year too. But then I was busy traveling another part of the world in the next year. So we really need to, you know, we really got to stick to the basics. Sometimes in our movement, we think it's really something else. You know, it's this project, it's that thing, it's this innovative new strategy for pushing forward the movement. That's not really what we're all about. Those things are there, and we do them, but the real thing that has to be there is you have to be cultivating pure devotional service within your heart. If you're not doing that, as we discussed last night, you're missing the boat. You may be a big sannyasi, maybe a big guru with 10 million disciples. It doesn't matter. If someone is not cultivating pure devotional service, they will be here today and gone tomorrow. It's just a matter of time before they're finished. So every single member of ISKCON, all the way from the GBC down to the pot cleaners, every single member must be cultivating pure devotional service, and that will be their strength, and that will be their longevity. And that will be the guarantee of them attaining perfection. Questions more? Yeah?
How do you check out progress and how we are?
How do you gauge your progress? There's a wonderful shloka in the Bhagavatam which answers your question in the most wonderful poetic way. If I can remember that shloka. Bhakti pareshanu bhuro bhakti ranyatra shaisatra ka eka kalaha prapanyama nashriyatas nana shushtushti pushti chadapayo nagasam. Devotion, direct experience of the Lord, and detachment from all material things occur simultaneously for one who is sincerely engaged in devotional service, just as nourishment, eradication from hunger, and satisfaction occur increasingly with each bite for one who is engaged in eating. So, you eat, don't you? Yeah. So you like eating? Yeah. It eradicates your hunger, it nourishes your body, and it's really satisfying. So in the same way that you can gauge your eating, just like you may be taking your prasad, so I bring you one plate with prasad, and then I come to give you seconds, and you take the seconds. But then I come for thirds, and you say it like this. You say, no. I try to put more, and you go, no. Why do you say no? Because you can gauge how your belly is being filled. No one has to tell you, Prabhu, your belly is getting filled now. You know it's getting filled. You can easily gauge when your own belly is filling up. Everyone. Can anyone here not gauge when their belly is getting filled up? Everyone here can gauge when their belly is filling up, you see. So in the same way, you have, just as you have a sense of gauging your own belly getting filled up, you also have a sense of how you're advancing in Krishna consciousness within you. You don't need someone to tell you. So how do you know when you're advancing? That's explained in this verse. Bhakti, Pareshvanu, Baro, Bharaktir. Those three things. Here's the three things you can judge if you're advancing or not. Are you developing more and more loving feelings for Krishna? Are you developing more and more loving feelings for the spiritual master? Are you developing more and more loving feelings for the devotees? Are you developing more and more attraction for the holy name? You see, that's the first item, bhakti. The second is direct experience of the Lord. Now that's an amazing concept, that you can directly experience Krishna. That means that actually Krishna is available for you to directly experience Him with your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, and your sense of touch. Krishna is available. Also with the mind and the intelligence. Krishna is directly perceivable. And as we become more and more purified, we begin to experience Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. That's a very advanced level. But that's one way you know you're really advancing. When you start to become aware of the presence of Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. And the third item is Bharaktir, that you become detached from everything else. Someone offers you sense gratification, you just laugh. Who wants such a ridiculous thing? You see? It's like Haridas Thakur and the prostitute. It was a joke for him. You know, who wants to indulge in some gross, nasty thing as sex life, you see? It's like a joke. Yeah. You know. So the more you advance in Krishna consciousness, you will not be attracted. There's a nice prayer by Jamunacharya Albangu. Yadavadi mamacheta Krishna padaravinde Nava nava rasadamanu yatarantu masir Tadavadi bhattanadi sangame smaryamane Bhavati mukashushtu nishtivanamsha. He says, it's that ever since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, getting nava nava rasa, ever increasingly wonderful taste in their service. Whenever the thought of sex comes, you know, sneaks into my brain, my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. So that is advancement. If the idea of sex pleasure comes sneaking into your brain and you spit at the thought, then you know you're advancing. But if you think, that might be nice, then you know you're really having advanced. So when you can, the thought of sex pleasure enters your brain and you go, get the hell out of here, you rascal. Then you know you're advancing. Because you're developing a taste for detachment. Because you're actually getting pleasure from Krishna's name. The pleasure of Krishna's name is thousands and millions of times more relishable than all the pleasures that have ever been tasted in this material world, even by the demigods and the heavenly planets, multiplied to the 10 billionth power. That's how much pleasure there is in one pure utterance of Hare Krishna. So we have to learn how to chant with love. And if you're actually getting that taste where you're losing your attraction for all of the flickering so-called allurements of this material world, then you know you're advanced. So you don't need someone to give you a little certificate. Now you're an advanced devotee, you know. Here's your little certificate. No, you don't need a certificate. You will experience it yourself, as I have described. Any other questions? Yes. How can we know if someone is said to be advanced, if they're really advanced or not? Is that the question? You have to read the books. Really have to read Prabhupada's books very carefully, because everything is explained here. If you read the books, then you will know. Just like before one gets initiated, they're supposed to study the guru for 6 months to see if he really lives up. The guru is supposed to be a living embodiment of the Srimad Bhagavatam. His every thought, word, and deed should be a manifestation of the Bhagavatam. So one has to study what the Bhagavatam says, and then you study the prospective guru. Is he really a living embodiment of the Srimad Bhagavatam? So you have to pray to Krishna for the ability to distinguish. And Krishna guarantees that if you're in that mood of bhakti 24 hours a day, Tesham satata yuktanam vradatam pratipurvakam dadami budhiyogam tam yenam mam upayanti te. If to those who are constantly devoted to worship me with love, I give them the understanding of which they can know everything they need to know to come to me. So all you have to do is immerse yourself 24 hours a day in Krishna consciousness, study Prabhupada's books, and then you'll be very clear who is actually fixed up in Krishna consciousness and who's not. It'll become very clear to you. And then you'll know how to respect them and how to honor them according to their position. It'll be crystal clear to you. So everything you know is in the books, and you'll realize it by pure devotional service. Does that answer your question? All right. Now do that. You develop that ability to recognize who is actually properly situated in Krishna consciousness. So, Gandharad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.